Welcome to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Business Spotlight is heard weekly at this time on 1450 AM and 107.1 FM. Today's guest is Emily Shears, Director of Infection Prevention and Quality Improvement at UPMC Hammett. Emily, thanks again for being with us today. As Erie's leading hospital and healthcare facility, can you describe the COVID-19 threat and where we are today from UPMC Hammett's perspective?
Yeah, I would say we've spent a lot of our time being prepared for any type of surge in patients. We have yet to see a large influx of positive patients needing higher level clinical care. But really, we hope it stays that way, but we are prepared to deal with a large number of ill patients if we do see that in our community.
Can you comment on the demographics most at risk for this virus?
Yeah, so, I mean, really, it is still the older individuals, those over 60, those with, underlying health conditions, so heart disease, lung disease, moderate to severe asthma, cardiac with complication, and immune compromising conditions. So we are seeing those in terms of more critical disease needing a higher level of care.
Emily, can you describe the ongoing testing procedure and who is a candidate for the test?
Yeah, so someone has to be symptomatic, first of all. And what we're seeing is that if someone's had a known exposure to someone and is symptomatic, travel to any endemic area, so some of those hot spots we're seeing in the media in terms of New York City, Seattle, even Michigan, in those areas, and or having a combination of symptoms. So we're still seeing, fever, shortness of breath, headache, body aches, loss of smell or taste, a dry cough. When patients are being evaluated and meet criteria or have some of those symptoms, we will get them tested in either the hospital if they're ill enough or in a collection center.
Once again, can you describe the warning signs that listeners need to watch for and act on if they become ill?
Yeah, so basically, again, it's those symptoms or combination of symptoms. So if people have been around anyone that they know has had COVID-19, or they have done any travel, even domestically at this time, we would say that they're at higher risk. And then those symptoms. So while we talk about being asymptomatic, we are seeing the majority of our positive cases have some combination of fever, headache, body ache, shortness of breath, cough, et cetera.
Emily, is the process for someone experiencing symptoms to start with family doctor and proceed from there? Or if symptoms are very strong, should they call or notify ER of their incoming arrival?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are seeing most patients presenting with mild symptoms. And in that case, talking to their family doctor, primary care physician, physician's assistant is really the best way. We're seeing a huge increase in our televisits or phone consultations. Those are all appropriate ways to get evaluated and talk to a physician about your symptoms. If someone has experiencing, severe shortness of breath or difficulty keeping their oxygen levels up, those people definitely need to seek emergency care. Talk to the healthcare providers in our emergency department about their symptoms, and then they can go from there in terms of if they think this is a risk for COVID or not.
How can COVID-19 infection be prevented?
Yeah, so people really should follow direction of public health authorities. Staying home right now in place is the safest place for people to be, especially if they have any level of symptoms or illness. So home isolating, and that means sometimes even staying away from your own family if you are having any symptoms to help prevent illness within your family. And then those other key points like washing your hands, if you have to be in public, keeping distance from others. If you're ill at home, cleaning those high-touch areas, covering your cough, and practicing good respiratory etiquette.
Emily, it is safe to say that there is a quiet confidence at UPMC right now, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, I personally feel very confident. We've had a very strong team in place, and this planning's really been ongoing and ramped up for a couple months now. as we really started changing some processes back in early January. So we have had our emergency management plan in place. Obviously, that allows us to do a lot of different things, to mobilize our resources, utilize our space, make sure we have, equipment and supplies, and, again, making sure that where we're going to care for these patients is the safest environment for our healthcare workers and for our patients. So we're very, very well prepared.
Speaking to that, how confident are you as the premier hospital in Erie that you remain fully prepared to handle the capacity of patients that may come to you with COVID-19?
Yeah, I mean, we have obviously followed the direction of public health authorities and the governor in terms of elective surgery. So what that allows us to do is utilize those patient rooms and those critical care areas to care for other patients that would likely come in. So we have a lot of flexibility there in terms of space, equipment, resources, physicians that would have normally had their resources focused on, surgical patients, elective procedures, that now we can really dedicate to any type of COVID-19 surge. So I talked about that emergency management plan. All of that is in place. We have dedicated areas to care for these patients that are all, negative airflow, the safest environment. So we're really poised in a really great situation to be able to take a surge right now.
There have been reports about if the surge gets overwhelming that retired health professionals would possibly come back. Have those types of situations been talked about?
Yeah, absolutely. Those discussions always are prudent in a situation like this where we're preparing, we're looking five steps ahead of where we need to be. We haven't had to implement any of those right now. We are more than adequately staffed to take a surge, but absolutely those discussions always occur in terms of if and when we would need to facilitate other staff members, other resources, other equipment. There are plans in place if that would need to happen.
Emily, can you describe the ongoing measures to educate UPMC caregivers regarding COVID-19?
Yeah, I mean, initial training really started in January, and that was just identification of patients, understanding what the symptoms were, what the risk factors were in that population. It's really moved on since to making sure staff are comfortable with their personal protective equipment, so those things like certain masks and face shields and gowns and gloves, items that we would use on a regular basis, but kind of in a different combination right now for these patients. So we've also done a lot of training around the special processes for specimen collection, how we get those to the lab, how we care for these patients and do other testing and lab collections. So in that sense, we've done a lot of training. We've also opened up a lot of just chat and question and answer with staff in regards to our processes and our flows. And I think that's been very helpful for us to find out where we may need other education. But our staff have really gained a confidence in terms of how to care for these patients and really, how to use the equipment that's been provided.
Emily, we have all seen the many stories in the media related to ventilator shortages, hospitals being overwhelmed with patients, and a shortage of PPE. Can you comment on the issues from UPMC Hammett's perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I feel we're in a really great place. Being part of a large system really affords us a very rich source of equipment and PPE. So we have our supply chain really tracks all of these critical items. So we know an exact count of how many N95 masks, how many ventilators, how many beds are available, how many gowns, how many gloves. And what allows us to kind of flex in those areas is if and when we would ever have some type of shortage, we know that we have a pretty deep supply chain source there. So we have not had to face any concerning decisions right now. We do have full PPE supply right now. And again, following use, staff are, making sure we're following certain conservation efforts so we're not wasting any of the valuable PPE. So we are judicious and careful with the critical supplies, but really I would say we continue to be very fortunate in that area.
Emily, can you comment on the strength and resiliency you have seen from the caregivers at UPMC Hammett?
Yeah, our staffs really have been amazing. I feel like they're going above and beyond. Just for an example, our collection center, really the first day we put out for volunteers to work there. We had over 100 staff volunteer. So it just shows the willingness to respond and help the community. They're really highly skilled and compassionate. So I feel that we're in a great situation for our COVID-19 units or these spaces. The staff are fully confident in how to wear the PPE appropriately so that they, you know, are making sure they're not having any exposure to these patients. But they, again, you know, have really stepped up and really amazed me. The N95 masks can be difficult to work through. They obviously filter 95% of the particulates, so they can be a little difficult to breathe through. And we have some staff that can tolerate those for hours and hours, almost a full shift. So they're a really robust group and, again, very, very skilled.
While older demographics are more susceptible, we have also heard many stories that younger demographics, even infants, having contracted this virus. Can you comment on the demographics of what UPMC Hammett has seen so far?
You know, we've been fortunate, even across UPMC, to not have a major, major surge like areas in New York City. But what we have seen around the country is that, again, you know, unfortunately, it does seem to be those individuals with comorbidities. There can be some younger demographics, you know, 40s, 50s, that do have history of underlying illness like heart disease and diabetes or asthma. And then with the children, you know, we're seeing very, very mild disease. We're not seeing a lot of children present in a way across the country where they're requiring that higher level of critical care. So I would say overall, again, just those older individuals that seem to be at high risk.
There have been reports that ways to contract the disease are varied, including the obvious exposure to someone that has it and the not so obvious, someone who's not showing symptoms but still carrying the disease. Can you comment on this?
Well, I think we have to kind of remind ourselves viruses often, even like influenza, patients or people that have influenza or respiratory viruses can spread that about 24 hours to 48 hours before their symptoms appear. So when we think about these quote-unquote asymptomatic patients, oftentimes it doesn't mean they won't develop symptoms. It means that just like influenza, you know, a day, maybe a day and a half or 2 days before they develop their first symptom, they have already had the virus working in their bodies, and so they have the ability to spread it because it's already in their respiratory secretions. Their body is already kind of starting to fight that off. So it's not conclusive, but really, you know, again, that person that had COVID could be asymptomatic today and spreading the virus, start to have symptoms tomorrow or the next day, and then that's obviously when they're having a higher level of virus and able to spread as well. So again, shedding the virus is what we'd say in terms of respiratory secretions. So that's where that asymptomatic piece comes in. So that is why the staying at home, you know, social distancing is important, that if someone's been exposed and they don't quite know that they're going to have symptoms yet but could be spreading the disease, why those things are important.
Has there been more data gathered about the incubation period for this virus?
Actually, you know, I kind of sporadically check on the CDC site for some of those things, and they're still really kind of basing that on existing literature about other coronaviruses, and they're still sticking to the, you know, basically 1 to 14 days following someone's exposure to the time that they would develop disease.
How important is that stay-at-home order from yours and UPMC Hammett's perspective?
Well, again, you know, public health authorities have studied this. The CDC has given their input because they have been following this from, you know, the beginning, even when it was in other countries and starting. And what the reason the stay-at-home is so effective is that in other countries where this has become a really underlying continued community spread, the only effective measures for stopping that spread and has been for people to basically stay at home. And why that's important is, you know, what I mentioned before is those people that could develop disease could be spreading that the day before. So they're feeling fine, not knowing that 24 hours from now, I'm going to start to have a fever or shortness of breath and I'm going to have symptoms. So, you know, I might feel fine today to go to the store, not realizing that I could be exposing other individuals going today. So that's why that staying at home is really important. And we're still trying to mitigate this. We still have opportunities to stop the spread. And so if people do stay home, again, making sure that they abide by those social distancing if they have to go out. But those are going to be the most effective measures.
Emily, the Surgeon General commented that nationally we are in a very difficult two-week period of time. Do you believe that the most difficult days are still in front of us here in Erie?
You know, I'd like to hope that they're not, but based on what we're seeing in terms of our testing and collection, I would say that we are lagging behind the rest of the country. You know, other places have seen a big surge, and we've seen it kind of move from the eastern part of the state in Pennsylvania over towards the western. We are still not having that unprecedented kind of underlying ongoing community spread. However, I would just caution that all of the communities that have had major outbreaks, I think we're unaware as well. So we're doing our best when patients are symptomatic to collect on all of them so that we can get a good sense of the spread and what's ongoing in our community. We know, as Kathy Dahlkamper has mentioned, that we do have cases with unknown exposures indicating community spread. So again, I think we're unaware. I don't think we have kind of hit our tip of the iceberg yet before we go down, but I do hope that as we've kind of mentioned, our curve is very flat in our area.
It sounds as if the next 2 weeks are a very critical two-week period to prevent the spreading of this virus for all Americans. Deborah Birx, the Trump administration's coronavirus response coordinator, commented on Sunday that she would advise against visiting grocery stores or pharmacies. Would you agree that now is the time to take the virus even more seriously and stay out of places such as those?
Yeah, I think it's a serious thing. It has, you know, the virus has potential to do great harm. And so while we may suffer being at home for a short period of time, really the effect of staying home and letting that virus kind of die off in those areas in terms of people not spreading it to more people and kind of ending the spread by staying home, it's going to be better for all of us in the long run. So, you know, again, if you have to go out, making sure you're cleaning your hands before you touch things, after you touch things, obviously the mask recommendation I'm sure we'll touch on here moving forward. But I think we have to kind of change our way of thinking about this and really see, you know, is it really critical that I go out to the store today, or is it critical that I need to, get out and do something versus, you know, can I stay in as long as possible to help, protect myself from other people that might be ill, and if I'm going to develop illness, protect others from me.
If someone leaves the home, should they wear a face mask or scarf at all times?
Well, there's been a lot of new evidence. So CDC is recommending wearing face masks or, you know, cloth face covering, something to cover the mouth and nose in public settings, where other social distancing, you know, measures are difficult to maintain. So if you do have to go to a grocery store or a pharmacy, especially in those areas, they're recommending that. So again, it's critical to emphasize that the 6 feet, you know, the social distancing remains important to slowing the spread. But that CDC is kind of providing additional advice for people to use simple cloth face masks or even other medical grade if they have the ability, you know, to already have, if they've already had those in their homes for other illnesses, et cetera, that those can, again, kind of contain respiratory droplets from our mouth and nose from getting into the environment in those public areas.
What signs will officials need to see as to when it will be safe for patients to discontinue home isolation?
Yeah, it's really hard to answer that. I often think how they're going to make that decision in terms of, you know, allowing individuals to kind of just resume normal. I think it will have to do with where we are in terms of the decrease in spread. I think we'll, in healthcare, continue to screen patients very actively for this. But I think, we've all learned a lot of lessons about about, you know, infection prevention overall, cleaning our hands, cleaning our environment, covering our coughs. And so I think they're going to have to see a certain period of time where cases are not increasing before they make that decision.
Emily, is testing still a confusing part in all of this? And is there anything new with testing?
You know, I think it's changed every week. I would say more and more testing becomes available. Really, everyone's had the ability to collect. What the bottleneck was is the laboratories. So now laboratories across the country, commercial, within hospitals, you know, UPMC, we have our own ability to test. So we're ramped up in those areas. The problem is now it's taking multiple days for those results to come back. So it's important when people get tested to make sure they stay home the whole time and home isolate until we get those results back. That's a critical step there. And then the swab, so the actual swab that we use is a nasopharyngeal swab that we use similar to influenza. It's inserted into the nasal cavity and pushed back towards the pharyngeal area. And then basically those swabs have been in, you can imagine, increasingly high demand. So being able to have a number of swabs available has been also another area that's limited testing across the country. So we're fortunate, again, our good supply chain, that we don't have those issues right now. So our collection center is up and running. We're increasing our volumes. And we're going to be opening that up to more community providers to make sure that we're offering that for really anyone in the community that needs collection. We want to make sure they have access to that.
Finally, Emily, and thanks again for joining us. I know you're busy. Is there anything else that you'd like to mention about COVID-19 from UPMC Hammett's perspective? And are there any things that listeners need to remember at this critical time?
Yeah, I think just abiding to the public health authorities, you know, we all have our opinions and we're seeing different things, but we've been fortunate enough right now to not see a major wave of very critically ill individuals. So I think, you know, from our perspective, we're very, very prepared to take an influx, but we all don't want to see that. We don't want to see our neighbors and other individuals, you know, that might be at high risk contract this because we do know that it's does carry a higher mortality for those high-risk individuals. So I think the important things are to just, again, stay home, social distance, washing hands, don't touch your face. All those simple things will go a really long way.
Thanks for listening to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Business Spotlight is heard Fridays at 12:30 p.m. and Saturdays at 9 a.m. Join us again next week as Dr. Ford is in the Business Spotlight.